And Robin, welcome to East Lake Church. I'm glad you're here. Thanks for being here, and thanks for watching online. It's your church, too, so I hope you have an opportunity to jump into one of the live services at some point. Take your notes. We're in a series called Boundaries, and today the topic is family. A couple of weeks ago, one of the toilets in my house overflowed. And so, you know, that's a very, you know, everybody's glad when their toilet overflows. And there's always, I don't know, like when you're, like, you know, when your toilet is about to overflow, and then there's always the gamble flush, because there's like the toilet doesn't go down all the way, and then it starts to come back up a little bit, and it's about 3 inches from the top, and everything inside you is saying, don't flush the toilet again, because it's coming over the side, but there's the gamble flush. And the gamble flush is the one you think to yourself, oh, I don't know I know there's a 1 in 100 chance, but if I flush that toilet right now and it works, all my problems are over. And like, I am a total like sucker for the gamble flush. And so I just hit the flush, and there's that moment where there's the moment where you think, ah, because it starts to go down about 3 inches, and then she starts to rise. And she just comes pouring over the side, you know, so that's what's happening in my house. And my uncle, he doesn't rush over to help me at all with my toilet. He doesn't come over and offer to fix it. He doesn't clean up anything. I won't tell you if it was a clean toilet or not. But anyways, there was nothing. He doesn't help me clean it. I have to call a plumber, and a plumber comes over. It costs a small fortune. My uncle doesn't offer to pay for any of the cost of the plumber coming over. You're thinking, you know, some uncle. Of course, it was my toilet. And it was someone in my house who dropped a toothbrush down the toilet. They clogged it up in the first place. It was in my house. And there is the small matter that my uncle lives in Phoenix, Arizona. Now, I want to ask the question, who does your family expect you to be? And who do you want to be in your family? See, boundaries are like a property line, and they tell me where my life ends and someone else begins. And in our families, there's like a whole bunch of different pieces of property, and we need boundaries because it tells me this is where my responsibilities come to an end, and this is where another family member's responsibilities begin. See, boundaries help us know where our responsibilities are in our families. And it's the big idea this weekend. Look in your notes. Boundaries help me choose my response. Let me read something from the Bible to give this whole idea some credibility. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your forefathers served beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, my family, we will serve the Lord. And in a sense, boundaries do sort of determine who it is I'll serve. Think for a moment, who's the most powerful person in your family? And everybody sets their schedule around that person and tries to do everything they can to make sure that person reacts correctly. Now, Bill Cosby back in the day said, give me 500 toddlers and I can rule the world. Because oftentimes the toddler, the little kids, have the most power in the family. Who has the most power in your family? Everybody's concerned about their reaction. And there is a huge difference between a reaction and a response. And like, just jot a note somewhere. When I react, it means my family's in control. When I respond, it means I'm in control. Last week we talked about, you know, you don't want to live your life like a vending machine where you just get your buttons pushed and there's like this automatic response. You know, the vending machine, you put in like 50 cents or a dollar or like $6 or something, you press F15 and a little bag of Fritos drops down. Every single time it's automatic, it's always the same. And you can live life like that in a family. Somebody pushes your buttons and you react the same way every time. And they're in control. Or with boundaries, you can learn to respond. Now today we're going to take a look at a very famous family in the Bible, the family of King David. And it's sort of going to be a look at some of the patterns in his family that were negative, and we'll contrast those with some positive patterns that we can have in our own families. And so in your notes, number one, invest instead of ignore. And you'll see how David had set a pattern in his family that they ignored their problems and they ignored the things in their family that they felt like would never change. So let's read about a snapshot right here, him and his family. Her brother Absalom said to her, Absalom's one of David's sons, "Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? Be quiet now, my sister. He is your brother. Don't take this thing to heart." And Tamar lived in her brother Absalom's house, a desolate woman. When King David heard all this, he was furious. Absalom never said a word to Amnon, either good or bad. He hated Amnon because he had disgraced his sister Tamar. So here's David now. Now, some backdrop here. David has 8 wives and 10 concubines. Now, a concubine is sort of like a harem that you sort of keep. And then he had 8 wives. And so David has like 18 women that are like trying to be his wife. And so you can imagine there's some boundary issues in this family. 18 women, one husband. And some people, by the way, have asked, well, why did God let men in the Old Testament have more than one wife? And the simple answer is, God didn't. Men like David just did it. Now remember, when you read the Bible, there's a difference between descriptive and prescriptive. So when the Bible describes something, it doesn't mean it's prescribing that as a lifestyle. And so it's just describing David, and David just decides, I'm an idiot. I want to have lots of wives. And so he does. I mean, he has like 18 different women, you know, and like this one man. That's what's occurring. And he has at least 20 children. So lots of kids running around, big, huge, mixed family. And Absalom is the oldest son, and he finds out about a family secret sin. He finds out that a horrific thing has happened in the family, and he decides that the pattern in the family is to keep things quiet. Who in your family is in charge of making certain that nobody finds out any of the bad stuff in your family? Who in your family, as you grew up, and they were the one that always tried to make sure nobody ever found out anything bad about the family? And by the way, one of the most destructive things when you go through physical abuse or sexual abuse is someone tells you, just keep it quiet. It's almost like saying, you're not worth all the problems this is going to cause in the family. So just keep it quiet. And Absalom, he tells his sister, it's going to cause way too many problems. Shh, 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 shh. Just be quiet about it. And maybe that's you today. You know, something really huge happened and it got out, or maybe you said something and someone just said, shh, 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 shh. Just keep it quiet. And do you know it can cause a person to even feel worthless and devalued? Because they get that they're not worth all the problem. I mean, how do you feel just in everyday life when you like pick up from somebody in your family or at work that, you know what, man, you're just a little too high maintenance? And so Absalom, he says, and you know what you really need? What you really need, and I can say this from years of being with families and family counseling, what you really need is someone to step up and cause a huge stink about it, to make a scene. Like, if you ever discover anything in your families, what the victim needs is for someone to blow the whistle and send off the flare and ring the bell and say, I don't care how big the problem is, you're worth it. That's what they need. And sure, they'll be scared of all the exposure, but what they actually need is for the whole mess to get out in the open. But David has established a pattern in his family. And the pattern is we ignore our problems and we ignore things that seem like can never change. So he tells his sister, shh, 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 just be quiet. And then he tells her this. He says, don't take this to heart. Now, how do you not take being raped to heart? When's the last time something really, really bad happened to you and someone said, listen, just don't make a big deal about it? And maybe not just in your family, but anywhere. Something really, really bad happens, and someone minimizes. They say, listen, just don't make a big thing about it. Just don't make such a big issue about it. Just get over it. And so the first thing in this family is be quiet about anything bad, and then it's don't take it to heart. Don't make it a big deal. Who do you know in your family, and they've been minimized? And they tried to say that, you know, and someone just minimized it. Don't talk about it. Don't make a big deal about it. And it isn't because Absalom doesn't love his sister. He loves his sister. The problem is he's caught in a pattern in his family that they ignore problems with each other and they ignore things that they don't think they can change. So I wanted to ask the question, think about your families for just a second. What do you see happening in your family and you're convinced that'll never change? And so you think it'll never change, so you have two options, be sad all the time or ignore it. I mean, David has 18 wives and over 20 kids. That's a lot of diapers when they're little. That's a lot of teenagers running around at the same time. And so he teaches them, just ignore it. Just ignore it. And of course, it doesn't work for Tamar. I mean, you know, here's what they do in David's family. Just ignore it, and then Absalom builds a wall around his sister. Remember we talked last week, the problem with a wall is it keeps bad stuff out, but it also keeps bad stuff in. And what the scripture says is she lives as a desolate woman, and a desolation, here's what it means, desert, wasteland. It means being in a place where there's no life, where nobody wants to live, not even the person living there. And do you know if you build a wall, eventually nobody will want to live where you're living, and you won't even want to live there. It'll be a wasteland. And that's where his sister's living now. She's desolate. And not because he doesn't love her. You know, you don't meet many families that lack love. You meet a lot of them that don't have boundaries. He loves his sister. But he harms her by building a wall around her. Is there anybody in your family you're building around? You build a nice wall around them so nobody can hurt them? And is it possible that you're creating a place of desolation for them to live? And David, her father hears about this and he is ticked off, man. He is so angry. He is mad. David is furious when he hears. I mean, he's furious and he does nothing. Do you have anybody in your family, who in your family gets really, really mad and then thinks they've actually done something about the problem? You ever fall into that one? Oh, you know, and David is like livid. And at a time that his family is desperate for an investment, he ignores his children. Financial planners will tell you that the secret of good financial investment is timing, and it's the same in our families. And the perfect time usually is chaos and crisis, and when everything's up in the air and they really need us, that's the time for an investment. I mean, he has three children. Amnon needs his father to come and make an investment. He needs his father to step in and tell him, what you have done is wrong, and there'll have to be justice, but there is a path back, son. And Absalom needs his father to come into his life and say, listen, he needs his father's wisdom and his father's guidance. He needs an investment. And Tamar, she needs her father just to comfort her and to support her. She could rebuild her life. And he doesn't do anything. Sometimes we get tricked into thinking that anger causes something to happen. No investment. Who in your family needs you to make an investment? And here's how you might know. They're in chaos right now, in crisis. Their life is upside down and they are in need. Is it the perfect time to make an investment? Of course, you know, when you see all that stuff, one of the things you want to do too is say, I don't see that. You know. I got up the other day, and we have a little tiny dog, and I don't know, he got sick, and I got up really super early, and I don't know why so many poop jokes today, but anyways, I went into a part of our house, and he didn't go outside, he just did his business right there, and I just went out there, and I just thought, I'm ignoring that. And I just waited till Clarice, my wife, got up. It's like, I was just like, you know, and you sort of pretend, did you see that out there? See what? Any poop going on in your family and you're pretending it's not there? That's what David does. The mighty King David just ignores his children. And it doesn't end well. Amnon, he never admits that he did anything wrong. Absalom can never talk to his brother. Is there anybody in your family and you've been needing to have a conversation with them, but you're afraid of what you might say? Or you're afraid of what they might say to you. And you're waiting to muster up the bravery. You're just thinking, man, if I could just become more brave, then I'll go and talk to him. And I'd like to offer something today. Maybe the problem isn't bravery. Maybe you're brave enough. Maybe the problem is you haven't created any boundaries for the conversation. See, oftentimes what we really lack is a boundary. A boundary is when you decide ahead of time, this is what I'm going to allow myself to say, and this is how I'm going to allow them to speak to me. And remember, a boundary is like a border, and like at a border, they have the checkpoint, and when you come into to a country at a border, there's a checkpoint there, and there's somebody in authority, and they have to check your ID, they have to check your identification, and they can allow you to pass over the boundary, or they can allow you to pass out of the country through the boundary. Somebody in authority makes that decision, and oftentimes it's not bravery that we need. We need to establish a boundary, and we're in authority. We say, this is how I'll allow myself to speak. And this is how I'll allow myself to be spoken to. I have the authority to decide that. And do you know when you have a boundary going into a conversation, it gives you confidence to have the talk, to at least try. And it may not go well. You may try, and we're crossing boundaries here, so you have to call a timeout and go away, and maybe you try again. And, you know, you go in, you got your boundaries, and the boundaries get all messed up, so you stop, and you come back, and maybe you try. Some difficult conversations, you have to try one or two or three, four, try many, many times. Don't listen to Yoda, the little green shrimp that said, oh, no, try, do. Don't listen to him. Who wants to listen to that little green shrimp anyways? Do you know what trying and failing and trying and failing, trying and failing, trying and failing, that's called learning. Learning how to have a difficult conversation when you set boundaries in place and you go try and, well, that didn't work out, so you pull back. And then you go try again. And eventually you've had the conversation. Who in your family do you need to have a talk with and you've been afraid to have the talk because you're not certain of what you might say? You think, whoa, this thing's going to come out, you know, like a geyser. Set some boundaries this week. Write down on a piece of paper, these are the things I'll allow myself to say. These are the things I'll allow them to say to me. But they never have the conversation. These children have no idea how to set boundaries. David doesn't do any of that. And Absalom, it says he begins to hate his brother, because he's disgraced his sister. This is his real blood sister, Tamar. It's rare in his family. Almost all of them have the same dad, different moms. But this is his real blood sister and his half-brother. And he starts to hate his brother. And hate will always seek revenge. Now think about it. Be honest with yourself. When you hate someone, don't you daydream about them getting paid back? Safe behind your wall? And you just like daydream? Certainly, they're going to pull us into court someday, and there's going to be a judge there, and that judge is going to hear the story, and that judge is going to say, oh, poor baby, you were wronged. And it's going to be in the paper and on the internet, and they're going to make a mini-series out of what a butthole they are, and what a champion I am. You know, and you see it in your mind. And everybody's there that doubted you. They're all in the crowd, and they all come and kiss your feet and bow. You were right. They are the wicked one, and you're like God. I mean, honestly, because you know you get to make up your own script in your head, and I don't know about you, but I'm always the hero. I'm never the bad guy in my own movies. I'm the hero. Because hate will always seek revenge. And it does in this story. It does not end well. Absalom gets more and more angry and more and more angry. He never deals with his anger. He never has a conversation. Gets more and more angry. Doesn't know what to do with his anger. And it becomes hate. And hate will always become violence or indifference. And in this young man, Absalom, he's a violent person. So eventually, he takes his brother's life. It actually ends in murder, which is as far out as violence will go in this family. And so I just wanted to ask the question, are you daydreaming about anybody like being repaid for what they've done to you? Now be honest. Maybe it's just like a track that's always running on the side, like background music in your life, and they're being repaid. And do you know that one of the things that keeps us tied to the dysfunction in our families is waiting for repayment from someone that probably never is going to arrive? Hoping that someday they'll pay for what they did. The Bible says that a hope deferred makes the heart sick. And so when you're hoping that somebody someday is going to pay for what they did in the family and they never do it, it makes our heart sick. And you know what we call that today? Dysfunction. Our families get filled with this sickness. They become very dysfunctional because everybody's waiting for somebody to pay up for what they did. So just check in. Hey, take a breath and go, whew, glad I came to church today because he's talking about all those other people in my family and not me. Here's a better way. Maybe you've heard this expression before that Jesus paid for our sins. Here's what that means. It means I can become free of the need of having someone repay me because he paid. See, when you have a boundary, when the grace of God comes in and the person in authority at the checkpoint does an identification check and sees that it's the grace of God, it lets it pass on by. And when the grace of God arrives, I can forgive someone. Unforgiveness keeps me tied to them. I just keep waiting for them to repay. Who do you think owes you something because of what they've done to you? And guess what? You're right. And if you're not careful, you're going to be dead right on the inside. Because it'll chew you up. Because a hope deferred will make the heart sick, and the chances of them paying for their debt is pretty slim. Much better to receive the grace of God from the one that already paid for it. And by the way, it's really easy to say to somebody, well, you should just forgive them. I don't know if anybody's ever said that in sort of their religious high horse, and you just wanted to slap them. Try it next time, see how they like it. Because it's really easy to say to someone, well, you should just forgive them. And you need to know that's not the message of the gospel. That is not the message of Jesus Christ. You need to just forgive them. Do you know what the message of Jesus is? You'll probably never be able to forgive them. They've hurt you too deeply. And so you'll need the grace of God. Because listen, what the grace of God does, it enables me to do what I'm unable to do by myself. So please don't hear this today and think, he's right, I got to go forgive them. I got to go try to do this. I mean, you know, I'm going to white knuckle it. And oh God, and you get stuck there on the F word and you're thinking, you know. David never comes to his son, Absalom. He never comes to him, makes an investment, and tells him, son, you'll never be able to forgive your brother. That's why we serve the Lord. And David, you know, he's this mighty warrior, and he's an artist. He's the one that wrote 23rd Psalm. Have you heard these lines? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. David wrote that. He's like a really skilled musician and songwriter. He wrote that. He had inside of him what his son needed if he just would have invested it. If he just would have went to him and said, son, listen, you'll never be able to forgive your brother and you'll never be able to protect your sister. Turn to the Lord, your shepherd. And even though you walk through a valley that seems like death, he will comfort you. But they go without provision. They go without investment. So I just wanted to ask the question today, where in your family can you make an investment? And then number two, challenge instead of concede. And by the way, we just started East Lake Church out in West Valley, and one of the things we're hoping is that you'd be willing to be people that would make an investment. So it's always great for me when I see somebody get invited to church or hang around, because churches just don't pop up and grow. You know, I mean, you have to make an investment in your families. And there's many people that won't set foot in a church because their feeling is, I don't want to go in there because I'm just going to hear about all the things that I need to do better, and I'll be put on a guilt trip. And the reason I don't want to go to church is because I always leave feeling judged and not accepted. So we created East Lake to be a place where everybody can be accepted and have an opportunity to turn towards Jesus. So please, like, reach out and make the investment to people. I promise we'll do there'll be plenty of love and acceptance. And so David has this family situation, challenge instead of conceit. And listen here, I'll read you another snapshot. This is many years later. Now Adonijah, whose mother was Haggith, put himself forward and said, I will be king. So he got chariots and horses ready with 50 men to run ahead of him. His father, talking about David, had never interfered with him by asking, why do you behave as you do? He was also very handsome and was born next to Absalom. So son number two now, living in a family that has a pattern. And the pattern is we ignore the problems we have with each other and we ignore the things in our family that we think won't change. Sound like anything going on in any families you have ever been a part of. And so that's the pattern in this family. And that everybody sort of conforms to the pattern. And so the big question now is, David's really, really super old. And the question is, who's going to be the next king? That's the big question, which has huge ramifications for the nation of Israel. And I don't know if you ever get so caught in the own issues of your family that you forget that your family has impact on a lot of other people. See, that can happen when family drama is super, super high. All the issues in my family, me, 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 them, them, hate, 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 anger, 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 walls, walls, walls. And you forget that your family actually could have lots of impact, and does, on others. These guys are so busy, like, inner fighting and with these family feuds that they forget that somebody's going to be the king of an entire nation. And the next son in line, Adonijah, this is the type of kid he is. He's the type of guy that his whole life has thrown tantrums, and he throws these tantrums and then always gets his way. Now, you can see an example of this anytime you want to at one of those highfalutin McDonald's that has a little playground inside. You can see exactly the type of kid this is, because the young parents, inexperienced parents that go there with their little kids and, you know, three or four moms sometimes, or who knows who it is, you know, dads too, and they go there. And they get their kids a happy meal, and the little kids get the happy meal. Of course, they're happy because they're eating their happy meal, and they get some little junky toy, you know, and so then now they're happy. And then they go play in the playground, and the moms are all talking, and they're watching them, and they're playing in the playground. And then finally, and it happens every time, one mom or dad stands up. We'll go dad today. One dad stands up and says, okay, Johnny, it's time to go home. Let's go home. And he says it nice and loud, and it's as if Johnny can't even hear. Johnny just keeps playing in the colored balls and having a good time and climbing up the rope ladder and stuff. And then the dad gets stern. Johnny, I said it's time to go home right now. I'm counting to three. One. And the kid doesn't even turn around. He just keeps playing. Two, two and a half, to two and three quarters. And, you know, Johnny doesn't do anything. And then, and, you know, he's just playing on the slide. And then the father does the big thing. The father's like, Johnny, I'm not playing around now. I told you, I'm counting to three. Now listen to me. One. And Johnny just keeps right on playing. And the father starts conceding at that point. He thought counting was going to be a challenge. Think again. And then you always see this. Then the father will go over to the child and say, listen, man, I told you it's time to go home. You're coming home right now. And so he grabs the child and starts to, you know, it's like take him towards the minivan. And then the kid starts crying and screaming, ah, you're hurting my arm, and screaming and yelling. And just, and then the father's like, no, I'm good, you know. And then he's like, ah. And then this happens. Then the father says, okay, listen, stop your crying, stop crying, stop crying. Okay, 10 more minutes and then we're leaving. And they just and you just keep conceding. And David has conceded so much ground to his son that they don't have any space where they can be together anymore. They have no common ground anymore. He has conceded so much relational property that they don't share life anymore. Abishai is making the biggest decision he'll ever make in his life. He's deciding that he's going to be the king. And by the way, your children will always, throughout their life, try to be the king of your family. You have any little kids like that in your house? They're like, I'm going to be the king. Because we all have something inside of us that says, I'm the king. Come right out of the womb with it. And so, like, you know, and here it is. Like, he's like, I'm going to be the king. And he doesn't even go consult his father, who is the king and has been the king for the last 40 years. He knows a little something about what it would like to be king. He never even talks to his dad, never consults him. They never have a conversation. He never looks to his father, and here's why. Because David has conceded so much ground. The scripture says he never asks him the question, why do you behave like this? He's always counting to three and never getting there. Now let me talk to the people that have little kids for just a minute. They need you to challenge them. They need you to challenge their behavior. Or someday they're going to walk around, be 35 years old, acting like a toddler and a little kid, throwing tantrums, always getting their way. They're going to have a wife that's trying to count to three. They need you to challenge them. Now let me talk to those of us that are further down the road. We've already had our kids and we've raised them up and we look back and we go, crap, I didn't do that. I'm the one that was counting to two and a half for an hour. Start praying for them now. It's never too late to set the stage. It's never too late to take back some ground. And one of the ways you take it back is to pray. Lord, give me something again with my children. There's a huge difference between crushing children and challenging children. And by the way, boundaries need to be visible with your kids and people in general. And here's why. Because even when the boundaries are very visible, a lot of us don't pay any attention to them anyways. A friend of mine is on vacation with his wife, and he's staying at this pretty nice hotel, and all day he's thinking about, you know, he wants to go down in the hot tub and relax. He's one of those type of guys like me that hopes when he gets down in the hot tub, there's not like five or six people in there anyways, because you know what people do in the hot tub. But anyways, he's like, you know, so he's the type of person that likes to go into the hot tub by himself, and he gets down there, and there's nobody in the hot tub. And so he's like, man, he's like most dudes. He's like, I get it to myself, you know. And he had a cigar with him, too. And so he's going to go smoke a cigar in the hot tub. And so he's going down in the hot tub, and he sees a huge sign. Big, right by the hot tub. Stay out of the hot tub. No one allowed in the hot tub. He sees the sign. He goes, huh, looks fine to me. So he turns on the jets and gets in the hot tub, and he's all by himself, and he's in there. And honestly, now I'm playing. 5 minutes later, a manager comes down and goes, "What are you doing in the hot tub?" He says, "Well, I don't know. Nobody was in." He goes, "Didn't you see the sign?" He goes, "Yeah, but I didn't. It looked like it was." He goes, "Listen, man, a couple hours ago, some guy took a crap in there." And there's my friend smoking his cigar with the water up to here. Boundaries need to be visible. That's like three poop jokes today. That's good, man. That's good. And I hope you're watching online. I don't know how that happened. I'll work hard on having five next week. Boundaries need to be visible because they're difficult enough to respect. But when you can't see them, that's really hard. Here's an example of a boundary. This dad is taking his little grade school girl to the dentist. So he picks her up after school, and they're at home, and he says, "Okay, you change your clothes, you're going to go to the dentist." And she throws an absolute fit. "I'm not going to the dentist. Oh, you can't make me go to the dentist." Now, in years past, it would have been the big power struggle where he has said, inside he's thinking, "We'll see who's going to the dentist and who's not going to the dentist. You don't understand who rules this roost around here." But there's a book called Boundaries by Henry Cloud. And if you want to know some more about boundaries, just grab it, because he had been reading and learning about boundaries. And so here's what he did instead. Here's a visible boundary. He said, "Okay, honey, that's your choice if you don't want to go to the dentist. But you're not going to Susie's birthday party tomorrow unless you do." "I'm not going to the school. I'll go to the dentist." See, that's a visible boundary. Where do you need to set some boundaries in your family to challenge your kids? Now listen, where have you felt, "Well, it's too late to me, my kids are already old"? And there's a big difference between challenging and crushing them. Now look here, the last thing, the good news. Jesus helps me choose the best option. "For in just a little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith. And if he shrinks back, I will not be pleased with him. But you are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved." Jesus, he had to choose his response. No one made him come to earth. And no one made him die on the cross. And no one makes him love you. Those are choices that he makes. You know, God has boundaries. And because he has boundaries, he has choices and options. God has lots of options. Jesus, he chose to come to earth. And Jesus, he chose to go to the cross, and he chooses to love you. Those are choices. He didn't shrink back, and because he didn't shrink back, we don't have to shrink back. Do you know, sometimes the issues in my family can seem so big. They make me feel so small. It's almost like the problems in my family can shrink me. And I look at what's going on in my family, and I just feel so small and powerless. And the scripture says that he didn't shrink back. And then we don't have to shrink back. Where do you need to set some boundaries in your family? Because when you have boundaries, you have options. David is this larger-than-life character. He really is, man. I mean, he becomes famous by killing a giant named Goliath. He's a warrior, and he's a musician, and he's a mighty king. And because he doesn't have boundaries in his family, it shrinks him. But it doesn't have to be that way for you. Because if you set boundaries in your family, you'll have option and you'll have choices. And it says here in the scripture that Jesus is on the way, and he won't be delayed. And here's what I've experienced in my own life, that sometimes I need to catch a glimpse of Jesus before I can see my options. All I can see is the huge problems, and I feel so small. But if I can catch a glimpse of Jesus, who's always on the way, then I see my options.